Our plans were settled. I went to London on the Monday and wrote him a letter from Robert. The artistic touch again. I also bought a revolver. On the Tuesday morning he announced the arrival of Robert at the breakfast table. Robert was now alive. We had six witnesses to prove it. Six witnesses who knew that he was coming that afternoon. Our private plan was that Robert should present himself at 3 o'clock, in readiness for the return of the golfing party shortly afterwards. The maid would go to look for Mark, and having failed to find him, come back to the office to find me having entertained Robert in Mark's absence. I would explain that Mark must have gone out somewhere, and would myself introduce the wastrel brother to the tea-table. Mark's absence would not excite any comment, for it would be generally felt, indeed Robert would suggest it, that he had been afraid of meeting his brother. Then Robert would make himself amusingly offensive to the guests, particularly, of course, Miss Norris, until he thought that the joke had gone far enough. That was our private plan. Perhaps I should say that it was Mark's private plan. My own was different. The announcement at breakfast went well. After the golfing party had gone, we had the morning in which to complete our arrangements. What I was chiefly concerned about was to establish as completely as possible the identity of Robert. For this reason I suggested to Mark that when dressed he should go out by the secret passage to the bowling green and come back by the drive, taking care to enter into conversation with the lodge-keeper. In this way I would have two more witnesses of Robert's arrival. First, the lodge-keeper, and secondly, one of the gardeners, whom I would have working on the front lawn. Mark, of course, was willing enough. He could practice his Australian accent on the lodge-keeper. It was really amusing to see how readily he fell into every suggestion which I made. Never was a killing more carefully planned by its victim.